it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to be honest. I forgot what question I asked you before the commercial break.
There's always one of us. One of us forgets. Luckily, the other one remembers. Okay. I remember this one.
Okay, good.
You asked me if I think the NBA talked to the Clippers owner or somebody and said, with laying everybody off, did you use that money?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the scenario I said, okay, thank you. I asked whether it be the FBI, the SEC, whoever asked someone in Aspiration, one of the finance people in Aspiration said the company was going under, you were losing, you were firing people, you weren't making payroll, all of these different things that were happening. How did you manage to pay Kawhi Leonard the $1.7 million that he was owed? And if they responded, well, we've got an influx of cash from Dennis Wong, LLC, whatever, to the tune of $1.9 million, and we use that to pay Kawhi Leonard, how would you handle that? Or I guess I think the question was, is that the smoking gun?
The words matter in this situation because if they say, we got the influx, we got the $1.99 million, and we use that to pay Kawhi Leonard, that is different than if they said, we got the $1.99 million and that helped us pay Kawhi Leonard. Because if it helped, I can say I didn't spend that whole $1.99 million on Kawhi Leonard. I had money saved up and, you know, some of the influx in cash helped with keeping the lights on, keeping the rent paid and all this other stuff. It was just part of it. Because I think a lot of people look at it like, and rightfully so, like I think this is what actually happened. Like, oh, 1.99, 100% of that went to pay Kawhi. And I think that's what actually happened. And if they say that 1.99, 100% of that went to pay Kawhi, that would be the smoking gun. But if they say,
well, I got good news. There's about 200,000 left. Or not 200,000. Yeah,
about 200,000.
Yeah.
If they say, I mean, the influx.
We paid the rent and the yeah. light bill with that.
It wasn't everything. There's always. I just feel like they have to get for punishment. They have to get that from somebody for sure. This money was paid to us by the Clippers. We paid that money specifically to Kawhi. Like, I think they got to get that. Even with, like, some of the new people, the new witnesses and the new people saying stuff. Even that, like, if I was Ballmer or if I was an attorney representing the Clippers, trying to protect them in this situation, that person says, yeah, I was told to put this money aside and pay this money to Kawhi Leonard. I would say, well, who told you that? And they'd say, Jack Smith told me that. Okay, I want to talk to Jack Smith.
Jack Smith.
All right, I want to talk to Jack Smith. I'm going to talk to Jack Smith. Did you tell them that? And if Jack Smith says no, Jack Smith is the decision maker. From everything that I see, everybody's talked to so far, and like I said, I think Pablo may have some stuff up his sleeve still, but everybody's talked to so far isn't a decision maker. They're the ones that just execute the plan.
So he said something today. You're right. I believe you're right. He said something today, and maybe he said this in the first one and I just missed it, that source that went on record with the, well, I guess went on record with the distorted voice. I don't know if that's actually going on the record, but he referred to him as a very, very high level financial person in aspiration. Maybe he did that in the first one and I just missed it, but it caught my attention today. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, so this isn't Joan in accounting or who, you know, whoever you fired earlier. It's not her.
Joan in payroll.
Joan in payroll, right. It's not Joan in payroll. It appeared to be, it certainly isn't the decision maker because that guy's in jail, but it's also, I don't know that it's a 9-to-5er either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember hearing the same thing, but that person still answers to somebody who's making a decision.
Yeah.
And once again, they say, yeah, I was told to do this. Okay. Who told you that?
Mm-hmm.
Jack Smith. I want to talk to Jack Smith. Jack Smith, did you tell this person to do that? Did you tell them to do that and this is why? Nah, I don't recall that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's who do you believe, right? And that's where that's not like definitive proof. Once again, I want to be perfectly clear. I think all this happened. I think all of it happened. But by what Adam Silver was talking about yesterday, it's more than I think all this happened.
I don't think Adam wants this to be true.
I don't think he does either. That's what I think. We said this a week ago. That's not what's best for business.
Yeah, I do not think Adam wants this to be true, man.
Yeah.
He is. He had such a bad day yesterday. Watching that press conference back, the full 34 minutes was tough. It was like, oh, that's okay. All right. He had a rough one, and he pissed off a lot of people, including Matt George, who's going to be with us in the final hour of the show. Chris Biederman's going to be with us here in just a couple of minutes. Because we've been talking about Kawhi Leonard and we have not been talking about Brock Purdy and the fact that Ian Rappaport reported today he's going to be out or they expect him to be out 2 to 5 weeks. Practice, I think, is going on right now. Kyle's not available today. He'll be available tomorrow. Robert Saleh is speaking today. I don't imagine he's going to be asked many questions about Brock Purdy. So we'll talk with Chris Biederman coming up here in just a couple of minutes about Brock Purdy, the injury, and what the 49ers might look like with Mac Jones under center. Since we have a few minutes, and I don't want to dive too deep into the Brock Purdy stuff, since we're going to get in depth with the co-host of the Candlestick Chronicles, did you see the announcement yesterday that WrestleMania 43 is in fact headed to Saudi Arabia?
I didn't see that till you put it in this morning or last night. But
pause.
Till you, yeah.
Whoa, wait a minute. Yeah. The play. We're on the next
flag.
Play.
After further review, it's a flag. 15-yard penalty.
We're on down. The next play. Are you for real? This is ridiculous, man. This is ridiculous.
Understandable.
But I didn't see that till earlier, and
I don't believe there's been an official announcement from the WWE. I think that came from somewhere in Saudi Arabia where that news was first leaked. I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure if Meltzer has it up on his site yet, and yet he certainly does. The announcement has not come from the WWE yet, but it is for sure happening in Saudi Arabia in 2027.
I think that's whack. I think that is whack from the WWE. I think that's whack when boxing goes over there. But that's just me. I think you lose something from the experience from those big-time events being in Saudi Arabia. And that's that. Like, I just leave it there. I'm not even getting into, like, the political and all that other stuff. I just think you lose something when you go that far away. And, yeah, that's tough. That's whack. Not a fan.
They're getting a bag. That's what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, I feel
just maximizing their profits.
I feel for I read a comment yesterday from someone within TKO, and I apologize for not taking better notes on this. They've really jacked up ticket prices. And like, and forgive me, wrestling fans, I don't care because I'm just not going anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I won't pay to go to their events anymore. So I really hadn't noticed. Our friend at WCW had alerted me a few times. He was like, you won't believe this. And he would send me a screenshot of what Ticketmaster looked like. And it's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And they said, yeah, Vince really had this stuff priced out for families. We they're so far behind UFC right now in terms of ticket revenue, we have to get them to catch up. And it's like, oh.
Look.
Let me explain something to you, my executive friend. Wrestling has always been a family-oriented business, whether you like it or not. It was the big thing in the mid-90s and the early 2000s. This is not family entertainment, despite how passionately Vince McMahon told Bob Costas that it was. It was not, but it would still be full of kids. Kids aren't going to the UFC.
Right.
That's not what they're doing. They're not going to Las Vegas to watch whatever half-ass fight you're putting on. I thought that was so... That just speaks to the state of that company and where the business is right now. And it was so sad to read that.
I'm so... Man, I mean, I kind of left before at one point, so it wouldn't be the first time, but I'm so not interested in wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm just not interested. I might watch the old stuff or the docs or something like that and catch a moment here and there. But they're so... they're so not locked in to the original wrestling fans and stuff like that. Yeah. And just, and really the culture and the nature of the business, like it's so corporate right now. It's so far away from the culture of wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if this is something that pushes people to AEW.
Yeah, it could. It could. Let's step out real quick. We'll come back. Chris Biederman is here. He's going to join us. We're going to talk Brock Purdy. We're going to talk Mac Jones. We're going to talk the San Francisco 49ers when D'Lo and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 13.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The pride of the Ohio State University is with us here now.
All right, that was not necessary.
Our dearest brother really from the Sacramento Bee, our very, very good friend from our favorite university, our man Chris Biederman.
That's not our favorite university. Like, what do you mean we?
We're a team. Our favorite, Chris Biederman. Come on, it's our guy. How many Michigan people join us? None. How many Ohio State people join us? Chris Biederman.
I'm going to find somebody from Michigan to have on weekly.
Just locked on Wolverines. Just come in and talk. Chris, appreciate your time, man, as always. I figured there'd be some quite a bit to talk about. It turns out there's a lot more than we expected. I know you and Kyle are getting ready to talk about this over at Candlestick Chronicles. Let's start with the Ian Rappaport report that Brock Purdy could be out 2 to 5 weeks. What's that look like for the San Francisco 49ers if that winds up being true?
If it's 2 weeks, he misses the Saints and Cardinals, which feel like winnable games. If it's 3 weeks, you're looking at the home game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. If it's 4 weeks and 5 weeks, then you start looking at probably the toughest games the Niners have on their schedule, at the Rams on that Thursday night, October 2nd, and then at Tampa Bay. So I would say that's probably the toughest two game stretch that the 49ers have this season. So I think, you know, John Lynch went on the radio today and said something like it's going to be week to week. That to me is the biggest thing. If they can get Brock back before that Thursday game against the Rams, obviously a division game, and then against Tampa, those are the two ones that you circle. And maybe, you know, George Kittle's going to miss a minimum of 4 games. So he could be back, for Tampa October 12th. That's about the time you might be thinking about getting Brandon Ayuk back. So if the 49ers can just kind of tread water and go 2-2 or 3-1, like 3-1, I feel like over the next 4 games, if Brock doesn't play, would be a pretty massive win overall from a big picture perspective. So yeah, I'm looking for them, given the way the schedule plays out. Can they get to 2-2? or can they go 2-2 over that stretch and then hit those Rams and Bucks games, get their guys back healthy, which they'll need if they can go on the road and win those.
When George Kittle was ruled out, they just said multiple weeks at first. I was thinking you'll probably see him after that mini bye with the Rams. Mm-hmm. We talked about it yesterday, me and Damian did, about, he's questionable. He's looking like he might not be able to go, talking about Brock Purdy. I keep looking at that Thursday game as I think they're trying to get through that scenario where they have the quote-unquote mini bye, an extra 3 or 4 days, and that's probably when you bring somebody back. Is that the way you're seeing it for both of those guys, potentially, George Kittle and Brock Purdy?
Yeah, I think so. I think at Tampa is probably the toughest game they have on their schedule the whole year, depending on how you feel about Houston. But yeah, I think that's about right. It's going to be 4 weeks for Kittle. It sounded like, you know, he might have been able to push it had that Rams game been a normal week. That might have been around a normal target date, but because it was a short week, they can give him the benefit of that extra time off. So yeah, I think that game against Tampa certainly makes sense. And, you know, I'm fascinated to see what this looks like, honestly. Like, we, for all the talk about Mac Jones and you know, all the hand-wringing Kyle and I did about how much of a massive mistake that would be for the 49ers to trade up from 12 to take Mac Jones in 2021, like, now we'll kind of get a chance to see what it looks like. And I think if you're trying to find a silver lining to it, Mac Jones has started 49 games in the NFL. So this is not a Brandon Allen situation like it was last year when Brock Purdy was hurt. This is somebody who, you know, is conceivably in his athletic prime. not that Mac Jones is like a prime athlete or anything like that, but this is a guy who's played a lot of football, who started a bunch of games, who's played with Kendrick Bourne. Kendrick Bourne was in New England when Mac Jones was a rookie, and they played 3 years together. But that rookie season for Mac Jones was Kendrick Bourne's best season. So that'll be something to keep an eye on while Juwan Jennings' status is up in the air. So, yeah, I mean, we'll get to see Kyle Shanahan's dream of, you know, how it plays out with Mac Jones, because I think everybody kind of has the idea that that's initially what he wanted, and he was dissuaded from that towards Trey Lance in 2021. But, yeah, man, it'll be very interesting. The good thing, the other good thing too, is that this is so early in the season, and that with the 17 game schedule and the schedule being as easy as it is for the 49ers, I think it could have happened at a much worse time of the season, put it that way.
Mac Jones, like you pointed this out, he's played football now. This isn't like, you know, trading up to, you know, to draft him when they wound up taking Trey Lance, but I'm of the belief that, like, it might not be so bad. And part of it is the schedule. The other part of it is I do have a great respect for Kyle Shanahan, the play caller. And I think he has a way of managing the offense that could be beneficial for Mac Jones. You know, it's not a situation where you're replacing Josh Allen and you've got to find a way to go throw for 400, 500 yards a game, or, you know, you're Patrick Mahomes and you're the central focus of everything that happens on the offensive end for the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, it's a little bit different of a situation, and I don't mean that to demean Brock Purdy in any sort of way, but you have built this team to function on many different levels, with Kyle being the master manipulator of all of that. And I, you know, obviously I would much rather have Brock Purdy out there for the 49ers to be successful, but I don't think it's the end of the world that Mac Jones might have to be under center for a couple of weeks.
Well, and I think you saw it Sunday in Seattle too, that really, like, the most indispensable guy on the 49ers offense was Christian McCaffrey. And somehow we're going into this week with the script completely flipped, that we're feeling the best about Christian McCaffrey's health when you look at the 49ers skill positions. And given the way he was used in the receiving game, there was that fourth down where he's motioned out wide to the left. Seahawks only have two defenders over there. He runs a simple out route, and you're able to convert an easy fourth and two. Like, can Kyle Shanahan continue to figure out ways to get Christian McCaffrey the ball in space? Because that's ultimately going to be Mac Jones' best friend, because he doesn't have, you know, the security blanket at tight end in George Kittle. And, you know, Ricky Pearsall still relatively new. But, you know, like, can't, can't, you still have Christian McCaffrey. So I think from that standpoint, you should be able to run the ball okay against the Saints. You should be able to figure out ways to get him the ball in space on those short passes to get Mac Jones comfortable and potentially in rhythm. And that to me is sort of the saving grace with all this is like, all right, well, you can still count on Christian McCaffrey getting 25 touches. And that's generally been a very good thing for the Niners.
Yeah, Chris, and I look at it the same way D'Lo does here, where you've got a guy like Kyle Shanahan, and he's dealt with, I don't want to say this is exactly who Mac Jones is, but he's dealt with subpar quarterbacks before. He had Nick Mullins under center and was able to have a functioning offense with him in there. He's had C.J. Beathard under center and had a functioning offense in games while he was there. You wouldn't want those guys there for a whole season, and you wouldn't want Mac Jones there for a whole season. But in a 1-2-3 game stretch, I think you can get away with being able to win games with Mac Jones under center. And I'm also saying Mac Jones is probably better than those two guys that he's had under center. So I think Kyle Shanahan, that's his strength. That's why you feel comfortable in these situations, because you have a guy like that that almost – no matter who's under center, he's going to be able to get guys open. They just got to deliver the football and not turn the ball over.
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about the defense yet, right? Mm-hmm. Like the defense coming into the season was probably, a bit aside from the injuries, was a far bigger question mark than the offense. And then you come out of week one in Seattle feeling pretty good about how the defense played, particularly a lot of the young players. Marquise Siegel, the safety, played really well. D. Winters certainly took a step and looked like one of the best players on the field. The defensive line did a good job at creating lanes for the linebackers to fill in the running game. So could there be more from the pass rush outside of Nick Bosa? Absolutely. But I think the defense, too, can give the 49ers a chance. Like there's a real possibility that going against Spencer Rattler, that the 49ers can score 17 points again and win that game, right? So it might not be that they need Mac Jones to throw for 300 yards and four touchdowns. They might just need him to not turn the ball over. You know, special teams is obviously going to have to be better. But given the way the Saints are constructed and where they're at and their quarterback situation, the Niners don't need to go in there and light it up offensively. Mm-hmm. And if the defense continues to play well, that could help Mac Jones out as much as anything on offense.
What's the key to the defense playing well? Because they've got, obviously, an influx of young guys over there. That's kind of the part of the ball. It's kind of the part of the field that's in the most transition is that defensive side. But you still have Nick Bosa over there who had a huge play on Sunday. And, of course, you know, Fred Warner, the guy who holds everything together for us.
I think it's Robert Saleh's return. I think... The combination just so one thing that Robert Saleh always did when, you know, during his first tenure with the 49ers, they would watch film cutups as a team and track loafs, right? That they would call them loafs. And they would basically like who isn't sprinting as hard as they can to the football or do their responsibility on any given play. And these guys would get basically like demerits in front of the whole team. And if you got some of those, like those would be embarrassing, obviously. And I think with Nick Sorensen and Steve Wilks, I mean, frankly, it just seemed like the defense didn't play quite as hard, right? Like there was an element of, I think there was a little bit of a lack of trust between the players and the coaching staff from the standpoint of like, when you have really smart players like Fred Warner and Nick Bosa who don't love the play call, there isn't going to be that same level of buy-in. I think there's just a different level of buy-in when Robert Saleh is there on top of Robert Saleh dialing up a really sound scheme, not creating, you know, insane mismatches that we saw with Steve Wilks and Nick Sorensen at times. The blitzes all seem really well timed. And I think it's allowing the young guys to play fast and play with a level of confidence because of how good Robert Saleh is at defensive coordinator. So to me, that's the whole key. Like it was going to be like, coming into the season, it was going to be, all right, the Niners are going to be good on defense because they have a whole bunch of talented dudes. They do have some talent on the defensive side, but they're going to be a good defense because they're greater than the sum of their parts because of how well coached they are on that side. So when you look at, you know, with very few exceptions on Sunday, when you look at that game against Seattle, it wasn't like there were coverage busts all over the field. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like there was a terrible blitz call that the Seahawks were able to take advantage of. It was a very sound defense, and I thought everyone was flying around and playing really fast. And I think all that's a credit to Robert Saleh coming back.
Yeah, one of the things that we've talked about is I think when you talk about the 49ers schedule, and a lot of people look at it like it's easy, all this other stuff, and I just don't feel like you can do that without seeing games first.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I would look at is I look at the quarterbacks, and I'm like,
yep.
Is this a quarterback against a 49ers defense that we think is going to be improved that they should be able to handle? And I see quite a few of those. And this Sunday is one of them. Spencer Rattler, I know they're in the Superdome. I know they're on the road. I know it's the NFL. You got to respect these guys for what they can bring to the table, and anybody can win any given Sunday. But Robert Saleh, Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, those guys should be able to, at the very least, keep it a low-scoring game to give the offense an opportunity to come out of there with a win, with even with the injuries that are going on. I think that defense looked phenomenal on Sunday, and I could see the same type of performance on Sunday against the Saints.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Kyle and I did the exercise before Sunday's game, doing kind of a big picture season preview, and just kind of going through the opposing quarterbacks like you're talking about. And I predicted the 49ers would go 11-6. In large part because, like you mentioned, it's not necessarily the ease of the schedule, but it's just the quarterbacks you go against. Like, aside from the two games against the Rams, I kind of think Brock and Baker, they're a toss-up. And maybe, you know, if you want to say C.J. Stroud's better than Brock, I wouldn't argue against that. But I think Brock's better than Kyler, and then basically all of the other quarterbacks the Niners have on their schedule. And just from that standpoint, if you're a well-coached defense and if the offense can, you know, stay afloat with all these injuries, then you're going to be a really competitive team. So I think the 49ers from the scheduling standpoint, it is about the quarterbacks. It's not, you know, they don't have Jordan Love. They don't have, you know, last year they had Jordan Love and Josh Allen, and year before they had Lamar. Like, they don't, and last year they had Mahomes again, right? Like, and Herbert, like, they don't have any of these guys on the schedule this year. It's all a bunch of middling to lower tier quarterbacks. So with Robert Saleh back, if they can, you know, accelerate the development of this defense with all these young guys, the Niners can be in a really good spot, and Sunday could be an example of that. And, you know, we're going to talk, there's going to be a ton of discussion about Mac Jones coming out of the game, but really, to me, if the Niners can hold the Saints to, you know, 14 points or fewer, I think they should have a really good chance to win that game.
You know, so we talked about Mac Jones potentially being under center. You know, George Kittle is out. We really don't know the status of Juwan Jennings for Sunday yet. We went into the game. We went into the weekend wondering if Christian McCaffrey was going to play. We saw Trent Williams get banged up at one point. Fred Warner get banged up at one point. You know, we talk about the schedule and the quarterbacks and all these different things. At what point, though, have we hit like a where, like, I don't know that the 49ers can survive all of this?
That's a great question. I would say, with the exception of Brandon Ayuk, it doesn't seem like any of these injuries are long-term, right? Like, if guys are tearing ACLs and, you know, knock on wood, and any other serious injuries like that, and they're done for the season, at that point, you start to be like, oh, okay, this is really, really bad. It's obviously not good, and, you know, you never want injuries. You'd love to have all your guys play 17 games, but none of these really seem like long-term from the standpoint of, like, okay, they're going to shut him down for the season. So, you know, like, you're not at that point yet. I know that's like a very probably overly optimistic view of it, but that's just kind of how they have to look at it, is like, all right, well, we're treading water. We have a Saints team that, you know, even without Brock Purdy, they should probably beat. It's going to be a really tough game because it's just really tough to win on the road in the NFL with a backup quarterback in general, but they should win that game. And then you have a team in Arizona that you're very familiar with, that's still, you know, relatively young and has a lot of moving parts on defense. So that, you know, that's a game that the 49ers can win. And then you have Jacksonville coming in. We'll see how the Jaguars are. But the point being, like, they can survive this as long as it doesn't turn into this guy's out for the season, that guy's out for the season. Mm-hmm. If they know these guys are coming back, then at least they can look at the fact that they have a 17 game schedule, which gives you another week, another opportunity to win a game and get to the playoffs, as opposed to a 16 game schedule. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Chris, what'd you think about my boy Slick Rick, Ricky Pearsall, man? He looked good out there. Is that something that you think he can put together every game, that type of game, you know, maybe a 1,000-yard season, you think he has that type of capability?
When they drafted him and I did the deep dive on him as a prospect, I thought like, oh, this is definitely a Kyle Shanahan type receiver. Like he had really good hands at Florida. Like he never dropped anything. He took some hellacious hits over the middle of the field and held onto the football. He's a good route runner, like the athletic score stuff. Like I thought, okay, this Kyle Shanahan drafting a receiver in the first round, like this could be a Pro Bowl caliber type guy. Nothing that happened his rookie season dissuaded me from that. Obviously, it's some serious road bumps in his development. Getting shot before your first game doesn't really help.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
But the skill set was there. And when he returned to playing, you kind of saw some of that. And it was pretty impressive for a rookie receiver. So hearing about him and Brock Purdy spending a ton of time working out together in the offseason and then, you know, going down to training camp, I watched him in the practice. He came back from his injury and he made a, you know, the most of his reps, I thought, in that practice that I went to. I was like, okay, this could be a guy. Like I'm not going to anoint him and say like, oh, this is a 1200 yard receiver, but like it's certainly there for him if he stays healthy and you know, continues to get better, because the skill set and the mindset I think is absolutely there. So no, I wasn't really surprised by that on Sunday, but they're going to need that. Like if it's going to be a revolving door with all the other injuries at receiver, like they need Ricky Pearsall to be healthy and be a steadying force, because if not, then things get extremely, you know, even more complicated, and it's already a very complicated situation.
Do you think, you know, Kyle, I don't know if he was speaking at a turn or just speaking ultra optimistic. Do you think we see Brandon Ayuk in week 6 or 7?
I have no idea, honestly. It wouldn't surprise me. Like, I don't know. Did you guys see the video of him running routes before the Raiders preseason game on the field?
I think I saw that. He was at training camp running routes as well, maybe around that same time too. So I was surprised.
Yeah,
I was nervous. I was like, stop. Just stop.
Yeah. He looks pretty good. I honestly don't know what, you know, I would assume it's going to be at some point in October or November, but I would just be completely speculating at this point. So I don't
Kyle
know, but it
too.
Sounds like they're optimistic.
That's what I think Kyle does. Like, hey, when do you think Ayuk's going to be like, I don't know, week 6? I don't know. And all of a sudden, Kyle Shanahan says Brandon Ayuk back in week 6. And it's like, oh, really? When he first said it, I was like, oh, really? Wow.
I don't know how closely you guys watch the press conferences, but my guy, Eric Branch from the San Francisco Chronicle, is constantly asking Kyle Shanahan these injury questions. And it feels like each time Shanahan's temperature rises a little bit in his head, because he know, like, Shanahan ideally would be like, I don't know, you know, some October, whatever. It's like that, like you said, like that's how he would like to answer the question. But Branch is always coming back with like, well, you said October and it's like November now. Like, what's the deal? Why are you, you know, those types of questions. And Shanahan is just so fed up with it. And he like, you know, he likes Eric personally. It's not like a personal thing. It's just part of the job. But my guy, Eric, if you watch the press conferences, Eric is always needling Shanahan on injury timeframes, and Shanahan continuously gets more and more irritated with it. It's kind of entertaining.
I love that.
I have a prediction.
Oh.
You know, as broadcast journalists, we're not investigative journalists.
Of course.
We look at the story. We look at the moments.
Mm-hmm.
Week 7, Atlanta. Sunday Night Football at Levi's Stadium. Brandon Ayuk comes out of the tunnel, makes his return.
The question is, does George Kittle and Brock Purdy follow him at the same time?
Hopefully they're both playing the week before
against
Tampa Bay.
Okay.
But that's my prediction.
What's crazy about that stretch is that's 4 road games in 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a pretty telling stretch of the season. I don't know how good Houston's going to be, but that might end up being a really difficult game. But then after that, I don't want to say smooth sailing, but Rams, Cardinals, Panthers, Browns, Titans, Colts, Bears, Seahawks, like, you know, there's a real opportunity that if the Niners can get their guys back, they could go on a run at the second half of the season. And it might be that, you know, 10 games is all they need to get into the playoffs. So, you know, as bad as the injury stuff looks now, if they can just get their guys healthy, there's a real opportunity for them to go on a run in November and December.
Chris, great stuff as always. We're tapping into Candlestick Chronicles, man. We appreciate you, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Chris.
The Ohio State's finest.
Oh,
yes, indeed.
Oh, my gosh, bro.
The Ohio State's finest right there, our good friend.
This propaganda going on this show for that sorry-ass program.
Number one team in the country.
By default.
Defending, reigning, defending national champion Ohio State Buckeyes.
Gosh.
And, of course, he's also of the Sacramento Bee and Candlestick Chronicles as well. Kyle noted yesterday, this obviously wasn't a part of all of the reporting, but I was able to go back and see that he said that Brock hurt his toe in the first half. Mm-hmm. He hurt his toe at the end of the first half on a scramble, and like they knew he was hurt. Mm-hmm. He was aware of it in the second half, meaning he being Kyle Shanahan, which means Brock Purdy was aware, like he was obviously in discomfort, and just kind of gutted the game out. And I'll speak for me. I certainly didn't notice. And then all of a sudden the next day, it's like, hey, Brock's hurt.
Yeah, I didn't notice it at all either. Somebody, it might have been Eric Branch, actually, who found the play, allegedly, mm-hmm. where he hurt himself.
The 7-yard scramble, I think.
Yeah, it kind of got pushed off to the mm-hmm. sideline or something like that. And he got up normal.
Yeah.
He got up like nothing was wrong. And like you said, he played the rest of the game. It's one of those things that happens, man. You just never know. That type of fall, that type of step mm-hmm. has happened hundreds of times in that game alone by mm-hmm. multiple players, and it just didn't end well for Brock Purdy. You know, there are the people who, once again, saying it's Kyle's fault.
Of course. Yep. Kyle put a hit out on Brock Purdy.
Now it's, if Kyle would invest in the offensive line, maybe, you know, he wouldn't be under pressure and have to, all right, man.
Is that coming from your friends again?
No. Okay. Friends-ish.
Oh.
Like, it was, they mentioned it. I don't know if it's their idea.
Oh, okay. All right. That's one of my favorite bits.
TC texts me. He wants to know if they're going to run Mac Jones up the middle of, you know, in a QB draw or something.
I guess we'll find out.
Kyle Shanahan's going to do the rock throat slit or whatever that was, and that's going to be the play.
I don't even think.
Mac, get out the way, Mac. Don't go out there.
Oh, man. TC is pissed that Kyle Shanahan is playing Mac Jones because Brock Purdy got hurt. Not necessarily because he wanted him to, but that's the quarterback that's next on the depth chart after your starter got hurt.
Well, San Francisco isn't the only place making a quarterback switch. It's happening at Sac State as well. Mm-hmm. Brendan Marion, head coach of the Sac State Hornets, is going to join us coming up in about 30 minutes. We'll come back. The Spurs are holding tryouts for a supporters section. I've got questions. A lot of them. Next here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ask and you shall receive. The bat signal was put out. TC is here. Elk Grove Kid Talk Line, 916-909-1320. If you want to get in on the conversation, we just start calling this the TC line. TC, what's good, baby?
Hey, what's up, my two brothers?
What's up? How you doing, man? How you feeling?
Man, I'm all right. I'm going to just keep it simple. We just going to see how it panned out with the boy Mac Jones. Kyle got his guy in that he really wanted. We're not going to say he sabotaged him and got Brock injured. He got himself injured, right? But he can stick up for that offensive line, right? But what I'm going to say right now, D-Lo mm-hmm. and Kenny, this is not towards y'all, bro, but I'm talking to Niners fans in general. We have to stop with that. Just because it's the Niners and Kyle Shanahan, we got to stop like nothing just never happens, right? Like the whole stretching, people getting injured, him not having an offensive line at all. We got to stop like overlooking that. As a Niners fan, not you, D-Lo, but I'm talking like Niners fans, like, oh, it's Kyle Shanahan, it's the Niners. So that didn't happen. Injuries, it doesn't apply to them. This happens to everybody. No, bro, that could be the main reason. It could be the main reason why this guy never He never puts all of his chips into a quarterback. He never puts all of his chips into an offensive line. The most two important positions of a team, bro. We're not talking about getting backup quarterbacks and trying to develop into a starter. No, bro, we're talking about investing in the parts of a team that you need to invest in, bro. And we got to stop overlooking it because he's Kyle Shanahan.
Let me you hear that? KC, it's time to stop.
Let me ask this. TC, he's still there. Bro. TC, let me ask you a question. Do you know that their stretching routine is wrong? Do you know that?
I'm not even really. This isn't just particular on the stretching.
But that's a yes or no question because you brought up the stretching being the wrong. Do you know that the stretching routine is wrong? All right. So
I don't know.
I don't know how you can accuse him of having the wrong stretching routine. Second of all, didn't they go out and get Trent Williams at one point?
Okay. They have to go get
didn't they draft Aaron Banks in the second round? Is that priority enough for you?
KC, listen, you mentioned a point. My point is we got to stop overlooking when something goes wrong with the Niners. We just sweep it under the rug and be like, oh, it's Kyle Shanahan. It's the Niners. So it didn't happen. Like, bro, we got to stop thinking that way, bro. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, Kenny, stop thinking that way. Stop sweeping. Hey. Kenny, I'm about tired of you sweeping. I appreciate you, TC. It's about time someone, you know, set it for what it is. Y'all just be out here sweeping things under the rug, acting like Kyle ain't never done, acting like the 49ers. Oh, it's Kyle Shanahan. Y'all need to stop it. You heard the man, TC. Y'all need to stop it.
I guess I'm just wrong. Yep. I guess I'm just wrong. I apologize. TCG also in there because he's the one that brought up the stretching routine and that's an issue in the strength.
Yeah, how you explain that, Kenny?
He says every Niners starting QB under Shanahan has had a significant injury.
Trey Lance broke his leg, didn't he?
He didn't stretch good enough.
Yeah,
if he would have stretched better, it would have been better.
No, okay. Oh, now Jesse making excuses, sweeping things under the rug.
If Brock would have stretched, you know, had a better routine and been in better shape, hey, he wouldn't hurt his toe.
Jesse. Jimmy Garoppolo broke his leg too.
So Kyle's just out here breaking legs. What, Kyle part of the mafia?
Let's talk about that. Kyle Shanahan is out here sending out hits for their quarterbacks to get their legs broken.
Let me ask you both something. How much milk they serve over at Levi's Stadium?
That I don't know.
That's a good question.
Has anyone checked the calcium numbers? Everybody sweeps it under the rug. And they don't check Kyle's players' calcium numbers.
What did
I gotta
Kyle's
be honest?
Still in there isn't did Mullins? Did he need Tommy John? Is that what happened to him? Nick Mullins.
Mullins?
Yeah, Nick Mullins needed Tommy John, so that's Kyle's fault.
Didn't stretch.
Yeah,
Kyle kept having him throw that damn curveball.
He's out here throwing 100 miles an hour for 127 pitches. What do you expect's gonna happen? TC is right. I'm gonna be honest. Completely honest. I have no clue what TC was talking about.
Kyle Shanahan, or Kyle,
I don't know.
Mattson brings up a point. He didn't sign Aaron Rodgers, sent Aaron Rodgers to MetLife where he then tore his Achilles.
Wow. Wow.
Riddle me that, Batman.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Didn't sign Tom Brady. What happened to Tom Brady? He played for the Bucks and got divorced.
See what I'm saying?
Wow, Kyle Shanahan's breaking up families now. Wow. Hey, I'm going to tell you what, TC. This ain't going to be swept under the rug no more.
Jimmy Garoppolo, I believe, tore his ACL initially the first time because he tried to juke back into the field.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. This is one of the stupidest plays in NFL history. Yeah, all because Kyle Shanahan told him, hey, once you get to the sideline, tat-tat-tat,
yeah,
and cut back in.
Hey, they told
coach,
they
I might get hurt. No, do it. I want you to get hurt.
Do you want a job?
They told him, Jim, you're pretty shifty. When you take off the ball, you should run more. And then it happened. Jimmy tried one cut.
How many quarterbacks in a 49ers uniform haven't been hurt running? Jimmy, running. Trey, running. Mullins, Brock Purdy, running. Wow.
Man.
Kyle Madsen brings up another good point. Curtis Warwick, I think he said his name was. He already has a torn ACL.
Mm.
Damn. Pablo Torre, I have your next story.
Investigate this. Find this out, please. Please. I just think that, oh man, the funny thing about it too is, do you think that Kyle Shanahan is in control of the stretching routine?
He's not even aware of it.
No.
I don't even think he's aware of it.
No.
He has no clue.
He didn't even come out onto the field until they're done stretching.
Yeah, that's not even. Absolutely. He's not even aware of it.
Absolutely not.
And they've had multiple strength and conditioning training teams. Because at one point, Kyle said the same thing everybody else said. He said, this is ridiculous. I'm firing everybody. This is ridiculous. I think it was like 2 years ago. He said, "This nah, firing everybody." And I think that was the same.
Starting with me.
I think that was the same training staff that like was there for a Super Bowl run and an NFC championship run. But he said, no, get him out of here. But now they're the problem again.
Well, we did hire the coaches though, Casey.
Well, okay. Yeah.
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 Wow.
Next interview. How long do you have your players hold a stretch for a quad?
TC finds out. Every day here on ESPN 1320.
Hey, real quick before we get to the Spurs and everything.
What?
I saw.
Oh, the Spurs. I forgot. Yeah, go ahead. What? I completely forgot. Who cares about the Spurs? No, this is funny, though. You're going to want to hear this.
You know, I saw something that pissed me off on Friday.
There's one thing you know.
I saw something, and yeah, you're damn
okay,
right.
Okay, hold on.
Don't piss me off.
Real quick. You just said, I saw something that pissed me off on Friday.
What was on Friday?
I'd like to point out, it's Thursday.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
There was a Niners game that happened. There was people got hurt, all this other stuff.
So this was Chiefs Chargers that night.
That's right.
Okay.
And I think it pissed other people off, too. I saw it on social media. I don't know. Maybe we're just the four people that were like, hey, what the hell was that? You see that play when Patrick Mahomes was scrambling? And then at the end of it, he lowers the shoulder. Like, as he's about to go out of bounds, about to go out of bounds, and Sam is like, oh, okay, I don't want to touch him or nothing. Mahomes lowers the shoulder and knocks down Asante Samuel.
Yeah.
Fair game. I'm sorry, fair game.
What's fair game?
Mahomes, hey, you got to lay out Mahomes in that scenario.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Somebody needs to light his ass up.
Yeah.
If that's how he wants to play, if that's because he did that because he knew Samuels like was like, oh, I'm gonna ease up. I don't want to get in trouble. But Mahomes wanted to come over there, load his shoulder, look at him, do all this. All right, scramble again.
Yeah, I blame the DB. Scramble on that again. I get the thinking, happens. But like, come on, you just gotta lay him out.
Now we know. I thought we were playing an honorable game. Now scramble again. See what happens, Pat.
There was a hit on Herbert, maybe in that same game. A little bit late. It was contact. Foot hit the. It wasn't like a. Mm-hmm. There was contact, and they let it go. And I wonder if they're starting to be a little more mindful.
Was it Jalen Hurts? Because I think that happened in the Thursday.
Maybe it was Jalen. Yeah. Maybe it was definitely a prime. It was definitely a standalone game. So maybe it was Jalen.
He touched him. He didn't even extend the arm, but he touched him. Jalen kind of went.
Yeah. Jalen took a bump.
Yeah.
Jalen took a bump, but they didn't blow the whistle.
Right.
And they were well out of bounds, but they didn't blow the whistle. And when you watch the replay, it's like, okay, they're out. But he didn't actually like hit him. Mm-hmm. He made contact with him, but he didn't like hit him.
Yeah.
And I feel like in a year ago, that would have been. 50-yard penalty, an automatic score, and the Eagles would have gotten the ball back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No. All right, Pat. See what happens on Sunday and the rest of the season when you go to that sideline.
It's a risky play because people will remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And
they'll get me to 15. Get me to 15.
You're always quick to get a technical foul. Beat somebody up.
Give me the 15.
Slap your head coach from time to time. Get a 15-yard penalty.
It might have happened with Herbert, too, but John Poles is right because Big Dom did pop up on that play. That happened. Jalen goes to the side. All of a sudden, Big Dom talking to the ref. He runs over there and starts talking to the ref like, hey, what's going on? Hey, get out of the way. What are you doing? Big Dom wasn't even over there. He ran over there.
You know what Pablo should do? Find out how to get Dom banished from the league.
Oh, man.
Quick note here. Brock Bowers not practicing today. Injury report will come out later this afternoon. That's important to point out. Of course, they have an extra day. Because it's the Raiders and the Chargers on Monday night.
That's right.
And you can come watch that game with D'Lo. Or as our copy says, you can join D'Lo and no one.
Damn.
The copy just says, join D'Lo and for a Monday night football watch party.
Call it redacted.
Yep. Redacted. Go. Join D'Lo and he who shall not be typed for Raider Nation football over here at 32 Bruce Street, Sky River Casino, coming up this Monday. It's the second night of the doubleheader, the second game of the doubleheader. Excuse me, I keep doing that. The Bucks and I think it's the Texans.
Yeah, we were complaining about that game yesterday.
First game, that's right, you were complaining, and I think that's an egregious complaint. It's going to be a good football game. Zabo's going to come watch the Bucks. Here. No, the Texans.
Oh, you love David Carr?
No, I like Baker Mayfield.
I like Baker Mayfield too, but it's the Texans.
I like CJ Stroud.
Thank you, Kenny.
I'd like CJ too.
Don't pander.
I was with D'Lo yesterday when this happened because I said these are two divisional winners last year.
It's fine.
Hating for no reason.
Then I slid over there. I was like, I mean, it is the Texans. They have no legacy whatsoever.
Wow. Yeah. Who's their head coach? Wow. No, go ahead. You hate black
head
coaches.
That's my boy. Wait, who said Tomlin is going to be a bum this year?
I didn't say he was going to be a bum. I said he was going to
finish. Remember, they are going to fire his bum ass, you said.
That's not what I said. There's no evidence that that happened because it didn't. It is simply I was rooting for him to lose because of his quarterback. Anyways, come watch the Raiders and the Chargers with us at 32 Bruce Street inside Sky River Casino. Game time, 7 o'clock. Come through, have some food and some drinks. We're definitely going to have a great time, whether Brock Bowers plays or not.
I think the Raiders win that game. Are they good?
If they beat the Chargers, they're going
to
get...
Where it's like, oh, they might go to the playoffs this year.
If they beat the Chargers, I think they'll get some people's attention.
Yeah, that'll be an eye-opener.
I don't know if it'd be a, oh, they're good, but it'd be like, oh.
I think we got it in the rundown for later. There's a few of those games this weekend.
Yeah, there's a couple of good ones.
Yeah, I think if they can win that game, even though they're at home, you think they should win that game. Right now, I think the Chargers are a better team. And if they knock off the Chargers, that's going to say a little something.
Mm.
That's going to say
I think so, too. Yeah.
Jam, so relax. All right, you're ruining the bit. The Saints started 2-0 last year. LOL, he says. All right, we get it.
Hey, JM, the Saints scored 90 points last year.
Who is it? Gary Clint Kubiak? One of the Kubiaks was going to be like the coach of the year, even though he's the coordinator?
He's not even there anymore, is he?
Yeah, I think so.
Gone. Dennis Allen.
Neither is the guy who scored the 90 points. He retired.
That too.
He's media's next great star.
So many things can change in 12 months.
Yeah, indeed they can. Indeed they can. You're listening to D'Lo and KC on K. As a matter of fact, why don't you do it?
You're listening to D'Lo and KC on KIFM 1320.
No, oh, my gosh.
West Sacramento. KRXQ. It's
like looking at a car wreck every time.
ESPN 1320, live on the Odyssey app, live on iHeart, live on TuneIn, live on all the apps, live on YouTube, live on Twitch. Wherever you're watching or listening, we appreciate you greatly.
Shout out Casey, because when he does the read, it's just keywords. ESPN 1320, Sacramento, HD2.
Every once in a while, it's ESPN 13.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, it's ESPN 20.
Well, like I said, I don't do it often, so usually I got to read, and I'm trying to do it without reading. Next time, at 3 o'clock, I'll do it. I'll do it again.
It makes you feel bad. I don't even know it by heart.
At 3 o'clock, I'll do it again.
But I got the button, though.
It's been my responsibility for 5 years. It's fine. Like, I don't expect either one of you to know it. Well, you guys have done shows without me before, so.
I'll read it.
I'll hit the recorded one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it's there for.
And I read it. I don't, because I don't want to mess it up, so I'll just be like, man, let me just read it. That's what happens.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.